Farzin Rezaei, and welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me here.
Tell us a little bit about your background. You're from Iran originally and became a documentary filmmaker. But tell us a little bit about where you come from and kind of how this happened. You made your way to becoming a filmmaker.
Yes. Actually, it was in 1972 when I first came to the United States. I was only 12 years old then. But I then went back and came back again, and I did my high school in Chicago and college and everything. But my aim from the first, I would say when I was 6 years old, I received a slide projector as a birthday gift. And I have always wanted to do something with images. And for the past, I would say, 25 years, I've been doing films. And for the past 12 years, our focus shifted to cultural and historical films with companion books. And these books are quite different than regular books in that we have transparent overlays of the reconstruction of monumental buildings, historical buildings, which are superimposed on the original or present ruins, let's say. So you can go back and forth and see how they looked in their heyday.
Well, I've seen your project. It's very interesting. But it's also very interesting that you, from an early age, obviously, you figured out what you wanted to do, become a documentary filmmaker. But that could take a number of twists and turns. You could be focusing on any subject, and yet you chose to focus on the subject of Iranian history, your own particular background, having studied sociology, political science, and social sciences. You really tend to eventually become a historian of sorts, right? And telling us about 7,000 years of Iranian history. Well, so what is it that took you in that direction? Why tell the history of Iran, and particularly 7,000 years of history?
First of all, Iran has a very fascinating history. But unfortunately, it's like been forgotten. So this accommodate period, about 2,500 years ago, we have so many things that we could talk about. And there was an exhibition at the British Museum, the same title, The Forgotten Empire. That is exactly the case. You know, the name was quite right, because there has been so much contribution coming out of that part of the world to the whole humanity. The idea of international law, for instance, the beginning of human rights, as it's mentioned in the Cyrus Cylinder, which is on tour in the United States, you know, and this goes back to some 2,500 years ago, 500 years before Jesus Christ was even born. And unfortunately, we don't hear about it. And that's the reason that I try to, you know, somehow bring that into life, into picture, into images, into moving picture as well.
Any idea why this has been forgotten? You've written about it. Others have written about it. You've done a film about it. Why is it forgotten? Have the Iranians not been key at putting down their own history?
I think there are so many reasons. One is that the glow of the Greek and the Roman civilization, you know, does not necessarily permit other nations to, you know, come forward. Other than that, you know, because it's been mainly European-oriented, you know, the Orientalism is something quite new, starting from 19th century and then moving forward. Having said that, you are quite right. In the third world countries, and especially in Iran, have not necessarily used the right means in order to, you know, to introduce our culture and our civilization.
Well, you've done so, as you referenced earlier, the book and the overlays that are there in terms of reconstructing these major monuments from seven key periods in Iranian history. Tell us a little bit about those monuments and why they are so significant.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, the process that we have through the collaboration of something like 80 scholars throughout the world. So it's not something that I have done personally by myself. You know, we have had the collaboration from many scholars, from many universities and museums scattered around the world. Secondly, the significance of these seven periods are that they have introduced so many things in that certain period. For instance, the first chapter, the first part that we cover introduces us to the beginning of civilization. Civilization, as you know, comes from civilis, the word, Latin word civilis, which means city. Urban planning, urban living started in that part of the world back in something like 4000 BC. That's like 6,000 years ago in Mesopotamia and Iran, what is now called Iran. That's a very significant point for all humanity to move from farming and food gathering and then settling down in cities. And introduction of cities means so many other things, you know, that came afterwards. Writing, for instance, accounting. You know, there is an exhibition at the University of Chicago, which is very nice, and shows us so many jobs that are presently known to us, such as a judge, a policeman, a potter, or, you know, so many different things. They all originate from that part of the world, you know, because they used to exist even 6,000 years ago or 5,000 years ago, you know. And it's very nice to make this comparison and say, okay, yes, we did have a doctor, but of course, you know, in another sense, or medicine person, let's say, and many other things, you know. So that's the first part. The second part, again, is about the Achaemenid period, which is the introduction of very tolerant government, which, although they control something like 23 different countries of that period, you know, which considered to be a world empire, as they called it, the Greeks called it. Nevertheless, they were very compassionate, and they gave autonomy to these all these different governorships or countries, you know, which they controlled. And there was one ruling law called data, which the word data is derived from, we use today. And this governed the whole empire, as it was called. Nevertheless, they were free to choose their religion, their language, their culture, their education, and so many other things, which is quite peculiar, you know, for if you consider that this is 25 centuries ago, you know. Later on, of course, the other chapters cover many significant points, you know, that are also interesting for our viewers and our, you know, the people who see the books as well.
Well, some of those interesting points, I mean, you referenced the specific kind of physical monuments and the actual architecture and the way in which this civilization, this empire, if you will, looked at that time. But you also referenced the great figures of Iranian history, Cyrus the Great, all the way to Shah Abbas. You know, tell us a little bit about some of those key leaders and what it was they were known for. Why are they significant?
I'm very glad that you brought these two names, because it's very interesting to know that, as you know, Cyrus the Great's name has been mentioned 22 times in the Bible. The book of Isaiah calls him the shepherd of God, the anointed one, Messiah, Mashiach in Hebrew. And it's very interesting to see that a non-Jewish person, man from Persia, is called the shepherd of God. What he had done was to... Let us just look at this picture. We're talking about 25 centuries ago. We're talking about a place where people had so many fights, so many battles. And after the battle, the conqueror would do anything he wanted, you know, usually killing the men and taking the women as, you know, captives or whatever. And then comes Cyrus the Great. This is the only person in ancient history with such a character. You know, you're familiar with Machiavelli's Prince, the book Prince. Whatever Cyrus is quite opposite to Machiavelli's depiction of a prince.
So more focused on moral code and morality within society, compassion,
yes,
not
freedom,
might and,
yes, and
power.
Crushing everything, everybody. So what Cyrus does, according to Cyrus Cylinder, this is not what I'm saying, Cyrus Cylinder, which was found in Babylon, that's a deposit underneath one of these buildings which was found in early 20th century. And the Cyrus Cylinder tells us that he not only freed the captives, but sent them back to build their own monuments, their own places of worship, and also helped them to rebuild their own gods and freely practice their own religious beliefs. This was quite new to the ancient world. Nobody had done this before. It's like today in a democratic society, in here in the U.S., you know, it's not a big deal. You know, if the government is helping some other religious minorities to build their own, you know, religious centers. But going back to that part of the world and that period of time, which, you know, everything was quite different, it's very important to understand. Now, when you come to Shah Abbas, you're talking about the 16th century AD, about, 400 years ago, 500 years ago. And again, in his capital city, which is called Isfahan, Shah Abbas does exactly the same as Cyrus the Great, which is very nice. He helps the Christian minority over there, which are Armenians mainly, to build their own churches. They had 16 churches. You're looking at a medieval city, which is not that big. But in a medieval city with Muslim population, you have 16 churches 500 years ago. That's very interesting. And he even helps them financially to build their own church. And he also participates in their Christmas parties, not parties, but ceremonies, let's say, you know, at that time. Again, it's quite different, quite peculiar. But unfortunately, not too many people know about these points.
So very interesting history then that Iran has, a long history. So to kind of come to conclusion, what is it about Iran's history, do you think? I mean, you're telling us these wonderful stories and showing us these wonderful images, but what is it that's really instructive about Iran's history that maybe helps us understand Iran today?
I think that the key word is tolerance. And as President Obama in his Persian New Year speech mentioned, from an Iranian poet by the name of Saadi, who lived about 800 years ago. Saadi tells us that all human beings are like part of the same body. And if one limb is injured, the whole body is actually injured. So it is very good, you know, to live side by side in tolerance and in freedom. This is, I believe, the main topic and the main message that one could get from the whole Iranian literature and culture.
So perhaps instructive not only to the United States and other countries, but to Iran itself today.
Yes, to everybody. Yeah. To everybody. Yes. Right. It's a you know, multinational, international message. I mean, the good point is that, you know, it will stay the same for all years to come, you know, and it's been the same for the past 800 years after Saadi mentioned this point, because, you know, it's universal and it's for all of us human beings, you know.
Well, let's hope that those lessons of tolerance and freedom are learned by all then. Well, yes. Thank you so much, Farzin Rezaian, for being here today and sharing the project.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure. Thank you.